Remember in the '80s, the short PE shorts?
Oh yes, God.
Well, I mean, I couldn't dress out because, you know, my penis hung way down through about almost to my knee. No, seriously, in sixth grade.
Fucking hell.
No, I'm sorry.
He just can't tell sometimes.
In sixth grade, me and this guy had this weird game. Oh God, I'm out of here. Okay.
Excuse me.
We had this weird game where we would sneak up on each other and kick each other in the nuts. Right. And I don't know why we would do this every time we were PE and just stupid ass kids.
Sorry. Oh shit. You tickle my face. Oh fucking hell. So serious. Oh shit, you got
I'm so me. Sorry.
No, it's good. Oh but, shit. No.
I want you to put your hands together.
There goes to the neighborhood. There goes
to the neighborhood. And welcome him to the stage. Big round of applause.
There goes to the neighborhood.
All right. Welcome back to the Smokescreen Podcast, episode 75, almost to 100. And we got part two today. Oh, no. Are we doing 75? Are we doing 74 part two? I didn't even think about that.
Oh, yeah. It's a good point.
I guess it don't
it
really matter.
It technically is episode 75. It is, so we may as well call it that.
Yeah, we'll call it that. It makes us have more in the book. We're getting close to our centennial anniversary. 25 more. But anyway.
It's fun to watch the numbers tick up.
Yeah. We're building a catalog. Slowly but surely. It's only taking 6 years.
I know you were about to give up on me there for a while.
I was already auditioning other people.
Hell,
man.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
That's cool.
I sent out messages like, look, man, you. I might need a replacement.
Fucking loser.
Can you drive to Kannapolis? Oh, shit. Anyway, before we get started, we're going to continue. If you watched last week, obviously, do us a favor. Share that video. I think it's important, and this one as well. This is going to be part two, James. His personal story here, and I think it needs to be shared. You got a lot of really good comments.
Really
a lot
good
of people,
ones.
A lot of people going through the same stuff.
I know. I can't thank everybody enough for those comments.
Yeah, I was going to reply to somebody. I know you read them all, but you don't reply all the time. So, I do tell them you read them all. So.
I do.
But he's busy
I'm
at work.
I'm so anxious that what will happen is I'll start replying to some,
yeah,
and then I won't be able to reply to the new ones that come in, and that would bother me.
That's always the way I am.
It hurt my feelings if I left somebody hanging.
I always at least heart every single comment. I still do that. I've always done that on every video I've ever done. For a while, it got in pretty insane that I couldn't keep up. But also, really quick, before we get started, just a quick reminder, we do have our Overtime After Show. It's a completely separate podcast, exclusive only to channel members and Patreon supporters. And I would like to thank our newest Lord.
We got one.
Our newest Lord, a channel member, Rebecca Powell. Thank you, Rebecca, for upgrading to Lord. So she is now watching Overtime for her first.
Yeah, now I'm nervous.
now we got to
have to worry about anything.
Yeah, nobody was watching but me and James. But thank you, Rebecca. I really appreciate the support. You know, YouTube memberships, Patreon, all that stuff. It goes a long way. Keeps us going. And right now, we just want to get at least where we can pay for the website and all this stuff to keep the podcast going. But we really appreciate it. Anyway, whenever you're ready, sir, people are going to ask about this.
Before we get to that, I've got two things.
Yes, go for it.
I held this off the whole time I've been here tonight. I wanted to do this on camera.
Oh, we got a surprise.
I met a celebrity last night.
For real?
Yeah.
An actual celebrity.
An actual one.
Oh, shit.
Look at this. It's me and Landon and Butterbean.
Oh, shit, Butterbean. Can he walk?
He can.
Okay.
That DDP Yoga.
Yeah, that's right.
Helped him
Holy
out.
Holy shit, where'd you meet him?
I met him.
Hold on, what has Landon got going on?
He's looking like his dad, ain't he?
He does.
You got that curls coming out of his hat.
Yeah, damn.
So, yeah.
Butterbean.
Let me see if you may be able to see.
Maybe it's I can
me,
zoom in
me, my fanny
there.
Pack, my son, and Butterbean. But
if you send me that picture, I'll throw it on the screen.
Awesome.
Just text me that picture.
I'll do that. And so now everybody that sees Landon, you know, that knew me back in the day,
right?
They bring up, "Oh, you looking more like your dad."
He is, man.
If he had
the long hair, long hair,
yes.
He's getting the facial hair coming in, the James Hetfield look, Metallica.
Oh, hell,
classic.
Well,
Metallica.
If I ever look at him and see him with hair like I had, that would be awesome. And it's funny, you know, we went to a Tough Man contest together last night.
Oh, that's where he was at.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
And I, you know, part of my story tonight will involve Landon and I, you know, getting into this kind of stuff together. But real quick, before we get started, I did want to bring this up. I watched a movie on Netflix today.
Yeah.
That it's called Old Dads. With Bill Burr, the comedian.
All right. Oh, okay. Yes, he's I know what you're talking about.
He gets in these situations where he's dealing with like millennials and you know.
I remember the trailer. Yes.
All right. Well,
I gotta
watch
that.
There's a scene in there that really it. I don't know. It bothered me, man.
I'm gonna write that down to remind myself to watch it.
They're riding down the road, and they do this "Would you rather" thing.
Right.
And it's, would you rather have sex with Samantha Fox in her prime?
Ooh.
But or wearing a Barbara Bush mask or something. But anyway, they did the Barbara Bush "Would you rather" thing, and I was like, anybody who saw that thing will think that came from this movie, but I swear.
No, I think
I just saw that today.
I think you said that before. I believe.
I was wondering when that happened.
I don't think that's been out long.
But
yeah.
I wouldn't have ripped that off that blatantly like that.
No, it was completely random.
It really was.
Because so even you said after, I can't believe I said Barbara Bush.
I know, it came. And then when
I think
I think that
movie's newer, for sure, I believe.
Okay, I hope it is.
Because I remember watching the trailer for sure, but that's why I wrote it down, because I always have, I'll see a trailer, and me and my girlfriend will see a trailer about this, and then we'll forget about it. And then it's like, oh, shit, I forgot to watch that. So I have a whole list somewhere in my head of movies that I meant to watch, or documentaries for that matter.
There's a lot of relatable stuff in the movie.
Yeah, I can see that for sure.
So those were the two things I wanted to hit you with, was the not biting Bill Burr's comedy and meat and butter bean.
Not biting this guy. You stole it, man. You stole his joke. All right. Well, so I guess, you know, for people who didn't watch, go watch the first one for sure. Last week's episode 74. James kind of goes through the whole story about how all this started, this addiction issue and all this stuff. All the way up to, I'm sure you remember better than me.
Mm-hmm.
You just kind of went through the years of building this addiction. I'm not sure exactly what point
then I said, I got a job at Google Fiber.
Yes.
And then I said, I realized I need to get help. And I think that's where I left it.
Yeah, it was basically the prescriptions had run out for the two surgeries,
mm-hmm.
and you were starting to like get pills and stuff other places. And then, you're building up this kind of contact list of people.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Who usually are older dudes who's gotten hurt and had surgery, really. But.
And, you said you wanted to mention this.
Yeah, I mean, people may not know what the hell, I don't know what you named this guy. This is ridiculous, actually, if you think about it. So James brought this OxyContin 80, which we're going to actually order those T-shirts to wear this. They make T-shirts, too.
And my boss gave me that. He watched the show Painkillers,
and I think
Drug Reps were giving those away back in the day or something.
We mentioned last week that at our Pizza Hut days, we had a lot of big deliveries in the mornings, but these Drug Reps would buy hundreds of dollars of pizza and food for these offices, and they're just selling this stuff directly to the doctors, and they give away shit like this. This is like celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous that there's even a fucking plushie that's a pill, is my point. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm already ranting.
I know. It's fine. I watched the episode one a lot this week. And there's a couple things I wanted to touch on that I think I missed in there or want to correct or whatever. That's why I had this list here.
Yeah.
To help me, you know, maybe not leave something out of this one.
Right.
And to just say a couple things. I wanted to say I never mentioned Lortab. All right. And I kept saying Norco.
Mm-hmm.
They're the same. They're both hydrocodone. It's just Lortab would have 500 milligrams of Tylenol, and then the Norco would have 325 milligrams. And like I said, you know, they were worried about the amount of Tylenol you would take in a day.
Right. So screw your liver up.
Yeah. So when I first got that prescription and they said, and my wife said that that's what they gave her when she was 13 for period cramps. Yeah. I said I looked at the prescription and said it said Norco 5 milligrams. It said hydrocodone 5 milligrams.
Gotcha.
Then when you take that to the pharmacy, then they'll give you Norco or Lortab or whatever.
Gotcha.
So it's just simple, but it stuck out to me watching it. And then I wanted to say this was super important. The journey, how long it took for me to get an MRI.
Yeah.
The point I wanted to make was, that I failed to make, was the first day that I saw the neurosurgeon when I was referred there, that first day I got an MRI.
Right.
So, if you think, and then after he operated on me, he only wrote me like a couple prescriptions, weaned me off, cut me off, it was over. If you think about it, had my doctor perform those x-rays in his office, knew that the x-ray wouldn't show what an MRI would show, if he didn't see anything on the x-ray,
yes,
I wish he would have sent me immediately, referred me to the neurosurgeon, because the neurosurgeon would have quickly cut me off. He would have operated
that
on
was,
me
yeah,
and
that,
cut me off.
That was my whole point, was they do an x-ray. There's nothing there. There's still something hurting.
Yes.
So the next obvious step is an MRI. I don't know why that doesn't happen within a week or whatever. I understand there's scheduling stuff, but that's just ridiculous to me.
And I did mention in there that you and I had great insurance at Time Warner at the time.
Absolutely.
So it wasn't a matter of insurance denying it, because once I got into the hands of the neurosurgeon, I have had so many MRIs, you know, lying down, sitting up in this thing that, the sitting up MRI is a trip. There's these huge discs you're squeezed between, and you're in this like recliner, and oh wow, it's a trip. Again, it feels like you're gonna turn into the Hulk or something, like, you know, gamma rays or
gamma
something.
Gamma rays.
But no, our insurance would have covered it. It was a misstep. And again, was it a doctor who had been beaten down by people saying they were hurting, you know,
is there
more than 50% of his patients on a daily basis coming in there hurting because they want pills? And
right.
I fell right into this group. I was just lumped with them.
Right.
Who knows? I don't know, but it ruined my life that I didn't get referred, because
right.
I do believe if it would have happened swiftly, I might have had a few withdrawals right there, because I feel like after a couple months of every day, you know, taking tons of these things, I think you're still going to feel withdrawal symptoms, but I think I could have beat it.
Yeah, I don't think it would have been nearly as bad.
Yeah.
I think you would have felt like shit for a week or something, but
I wasn't sold on this is my identity now.
Right.
Like, you know, I could have beat this thing. I know I could have, because the surgery worked, as I said.
Yeah.
But by the time I got seen by the neurosurgeon, a couple years had passed.
Right. That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. So I did want to point that out, because I kind of feel like I made it feel
because
like,
I,
sound
I,
like the neurosurgeon I, didn't give me any more.
Yeah, no. I understand, like, the doctor thinking, like, if there's people coming there pill chasing, right, or pill hunting, whatever, I understand that, but if you go to, if he go does his job and gives you an X-ray, he can't see anything, and goes ahead and sends you to get an MRI, that confirms or denies it right there.
Yes. Then you know that I'm lying.
Yeah, you're no longer his problem, number one. And then that right there just confirms or denies there's an actual injury. So anyway, that's no excuse to me. Anyway, sorry.
So yeah, I would say if I'm trying to give advice to people, that would be one of the things I would say is always chase an MRI as quickly as you can. If you suspect you may have some kind of nerve injury or spinal injury. So that's the main things I wanted to say. Now, about the first episode. So now, if everybody remembers where we left off, I will say this. I told you I didn't know how to get help.
Yeah.
Well, if this will kind of give you a look into the way my brain works a little bit anyway. I have a lot of friends, and if you would plot my friends on a graph, okay, say by education and net worth or whatever, right?
Right. I like to see distribution. I like to see that actually. Right?
And because I have friends that are doctors, and you know, then I have friends that are just, you know, nobodies, just absolute nobodies, but still my friends. Well, that'll come into play later because, as I mentioned last time, there's these standard deviations there. I was hanging out with people maybe like two standard deviations to the bad side of my, right. if you look at that as a bad, right. You know, a lot. But under my friend umbrella, my friend bell curve or whatever, I had a friend who, you know, who was a drug counselor at the time, and reached out to him, and he helped me get a bed at a treatment facility, a detox facility.
Right.
Not a treatment. There is a difference. I went to a detox facility, and this was in early 2016. It was a 1 week program where it's pitiful. Like, there are people begging to get into these places, literally sleeping outside the door.
Mm-hmm.
They're withdrawing right there at the door. You almost feel like you're at the door of Noah's Ark.
Right.
People are banging on this door trying to get in. There's only so much room in there.
Like the ship's about to take off.
Yeah. And it's pitiful. I knew I had a bed because I had a connection.
Right.
These people were waiting on either people to check themselves out because they quit the program or finish the program. And they would lay out there suffering and give up. I saw some people give up and leave again.
Right.
Because once you get in, I mean, there's no leaving until you just absolutely quit the program. Well, I got in, and I was the oldest person in there, which was really eye-opening.
Yeah.
There's a lot of teenagers in there, and you go in and they strip search you, which is, you know, humiliating.
Right.
You have to like squat and cough. And
oh, like the prison system. Yeah.
They're thinking that you're, you know, trying to sneak stuff in there. And that's the thing. That's the I felt weird because I'm like, don't you understand? No, a judge didn't tell me to come here or whatever. Our family member didn't like push me in here against my will. I want to be here. I'm not going to sneak something in here. And I had a CPAP for sleep apnea.
Right.
And because of my friend, they allowed me to have it. Because when you go in there, they take away like shoestrings and anything. So a cord on something or a hose to a CPAP,
right,
those become things somebody could use to hurt themselves. And so I was allowed to have my CPAP because inside your room, there's no electrical outlet. They ran a drop cord from the nurse's station into my room. And then every morning when I woke up, I had to roll it up, take my whole CPAP and everything. They put it behind the counter at the nurse's station. We had to wear scrubs.
Were they orange?
They looked like they were like worn out old ones from a hospital.
I was going to say probably some old surgeon scrubs.
Yeah,
or
probably donated, know. And because this was a facility is paid for by tax dollars, okay? But they only had so many rooms there, and you had to share a room with somebody. And there was one central public restroom for men and one for women. And everybody, your days were planned out for you. The only thing you would have liked about it is we ate K&W about every day. It was
oh, I love it.
Yeah,
I'm there.
They brought to-go boxes right. of K&W.
Hell yeah.
And so the food wasn't terrible. but we had to congregate. And they made us go to meetings and things. And no nicotine in there now. They will put a nicotine patch on you.
Right.
And they, the young people there, like, were showing me the ropes. They'd been through this before. So what you do is when you go in, they really vet you. They ask you everything you've ever done, how you did it, you know, what, how much, and then like they interview you on your exit, right? And I think you compare the two. They kind of let you see the things you said day one.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
And then you're clear.
Yeah.
You go back and look at those answers.
So what they do there is they let you start withdrawing, and it's obviously terrible, as I mentioned last time, and then you have to, when you withdraw, and you have to go to the nurse's station, tell them you're withdrawing, and you need your strip, which is Suboxone, those little strips that dissolve under your tongue. But the nurse has this grading scale they go by. They ask you these things, and they're evaluating you as you stand there. You know, what do you feel? And you say, I'm sweating, my stomach, blah, blah, blah. You tell them that. They grade you. You have to score a certain amount before they give you the Suboxone. And you get on Suboxone, then you get it twice a day. You get it in the morning, and then everybody lines up. And you get it again halfway through the day, sometime in the afternoon. Well, you do a lot of talking in there, right? And you do feel kind of like you're in a prison, so to speak, because they'll, like, march you outside to let you get some fresh air on certain days. You didn't get it every day, but they would take you and let you walk laps. And in this field, and I remember we came back in, and these young guys, because just from shooting the breeze, they knew that I wish I could have smoked a cigarette in there, right?
Right.
Or vaped or something. In 2016, there wasn't much vaping,
right?
For me, anyway. Well, they call us into the bathroom. The guys that you know, these young guys that I'd been talking to, they right. called me Pops.
of course.
And like, Pops, come in the bathroom. So I go in there, and he had picked up these little short cigarette butts while we were walking.
Oh, there we go.
But you can't have a lighter in there. There's nobody that snuck a lighter through right. that system, strip search and all that.
Right.
Chris, this guy had snuck a bread tie from the break room.
Right.
Rigged something up with a pencil and a bread tie and stuck it into an electrical outlet in the bathroom.
Fucking hell.
Yes.
MacGyver.
And that little bread tie glued red hot real quick before it melted completely. And
you can light one.
Yes.
If you light one, you can light the rest.
And I'm going to tell you right now, the guy caught the trash can on fire. And there's smoke blazing. He takes the whole trash can and starts trying to shove it down the toilet and flush it. People start scattering. I'm there. I'm like, what in the hell have I got myself into? I didn't even get to hit one of them little shorty cigarette butts.
Right.
It was the most embarrassing thing. We all ended up, he flushed a bunch of stuff down the toilet and burnt paper towels and stuff.
Oh, hell.
And we went back to our rooms. But I was laying in there going, could you imagine getting kicked out of a facility for something like that? Like, I was that close to, you know,
right,
to making it. And I just had to share that story because
it seems like
trouble
let
just
you
follows.
Have a little, I don't know, a yard or what, a yard, like I'm saying, like a prison, but a place to go out and just smoke if you have that too.
Right.
I guess the idea is, you know, just, you know, throwing you in the deep end, so to speak, but keep something. You got to have some kind of vice. I don't know. Maybe that I don't know.
I agree with that. I do. I there's got to be some reasoning behind it.
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
But I agree with that because everybody, you know, we all have crutches. But no, I thought that was pretty humorous. We did not get in trouble, thank goodness.
Right.
And I was able to make it. I made it through that week. And we got one phone call a day, and it's for 5 minutes. And, you know, every time I'd call, I would get the support speech. We're rooting for you. You can do this. Proud of you. All that. And then when you get out, you agree to go to these meetings, these multiple meetings throughout the week. And they're in the middle of the day. And I'm going, how will I ever make these meetings, you know, for right. work? And but if you don't, if you miss these meetings, because what they do is they take you for a week and they get you off of whatever you were on and they switch you over to Suboxone.
Right.
I got out and I got my first Suboxone prescription.
And so, I guess to be clear, so this is very similar to like methadone for
similar
heroin or similar, whatever, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a similar process. It's I think they call it MAP, medicine assisted. I don't know.
Yeah,
therapy MAP. I don't know something.
Right.
But they put you on that and. Again, you have to be a good boy and girl and go to these meetings and they'll keep writing it. There's always gatekeepers now.
That's right.
On the good side, so to speak. They want to fix you, but sometimes I think the standard they hold you to, because you got to realize they're catching people. They're getting these people at the worst time in their life.
Yeah.
Whether they were tricked into going to the place, chose to go, forced to go, whatever. It's the worst point in their life. And then when you're at the worst point of your life, the car you're driving may not be reliable. You may not even have a vehicle. You may not even have your license, some of these people.
Right.
So getting rides there, or your car breaking down on the way there, or just that, that's just kind of the way my mind thinks. There's so many reasons that they would kick you out of the program, take that away from you. Where did they think you're going to go then? Right back to where you were. It's
right.
I don't know that. I have things I would do to change the system, but I haven't even touched the tip of the iceberg. I'm going to piss you off before this is done.
Oh, shit. Piss me off?
Yes, at the system.
Oh, yeah. I didn't, yeah.
And so I went to those meetings to be sure I was able to get my prescription, but it didn't last long. It was the day I got out. I remember I went home, obviously. My car was in the parking lot, so I was able to drive home. I drove home, saw my family. They were proud of me. It was a good moment. But I said, let me go see my friend who was also my boss. And I went there and I saw him, knocked on his door. He came out. I was like, I did it, man. I did it. And we hugged. And he's like, I'm really proud of you, but I had to fire you while you were gone. I was like, what?
Right.
And he said, yeah, you remember that video you made, posted on Facebook before you went to treatment?
Oh, that's right.
He said, thing got shared a lot. Somebody at Google saw it, and they said you were a liability.
I forgot about that.
And I said, a liability? I mean, I voluntarily went to get help. If anything, Jesus. I was a liability prior to that. Now I'm good to go. And he said, man, I'm sorry. I fought for you. But so now.
This is the cocksucker I'm thinking about, ain't it? There was above him.
No. No, this is a guy you don't know.
Okay.
But. All right. Fair still, enough. Still, so that's a good name. Yeah. I mean, a good title.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he, yeah. So I had to go home after, you know, my ticker tape parade. I had to come back and go, well, I don't have a job anymore.
Right.
And that wasn't good. It wasn't good at all. Because I'm at this point where I'm doing a lot of soul searching, right?
Right.
I'm trying to, like, who is this guy? Who am I now?
Right.
You know, I'm a recovering addict officially. It's in the books.
And you need that, like, routine, mm-hmm. daily routine to, yeah.
Yeah.
Not to mention, you know, getting paid.
Yeah. But, getting yeah. paid. But, yeah, and not feeling like a failure.
Right.
Feeling like, okay, I've got this and I still have a job. But, man, I didn't even have a chance to prove anything. So now I'm on the job hunt. And maybe 2 weeks into this whole new life, my wife said she didn't want to be married anymore.
Right. That was, yep.
So I lost my job. And then my family. And listen, at that moment, I could have made you hate her. I could have made you think I was the biggest victim and woe is me. But it wasn't just this little week of treatment and then losing my job. I mean, we're talking a few years of me checking out. Mentally,
right.
Emotionally, and say, you know, putting it on autopilot, marriage.
Right.
And I mentioned in part one that we had, you know, these troubles. We were having to move around because some things fell through on a house, and we were trying to keep the kids in the same school system. So finding a house there was difficult. And again, luckily, have friends who helped out with that as well. And that's one thing, that's a common theme you will hear me say, is friends. You know, I had friends. And that, I'm one of the lucky ones.
Right.
I've seen people in treatment with no support. Now, did they burn all their bridges, or were they just not blessed with as many friends as I have? I don't know. But, wow, I could not imagine trying to go through this lifestyle without friends there. And any, you know, just somebody you feel like you can open up to. So somebody has your back. So anyway, that's when I called you. And I mean, because there were some things there. I won't go into that whole long story, but, you know, I just said, Chris, hey, can I come stay at your house? And I figured it would be a week or two.
Yeah.
And it would be like, oh, come on back home, you know. Me and the kids miss you. Well, it didn't turn out that way. It was like out with the old, in with the new.
Yeah.
Things happened really quickly. And so
yeah, we won't go into the
no. That could be bad. That's overtime.
That could be an overtime.
Fair enough.
That's up to you.
I'm cool with that overtime.
That's completely up to you.
Because they need to hear how you worked with the police to get me stopped on the side of the road. And
that's up to you.
They need to hear that story.
To do the overtime if you want to do that. But there was some police
involved. Guy got me put in handcuffs for the only time in my life.
I did it out of love,
I swear. It wasn't sexual.
I did it out of love, man. I really did.
Oh, God.
That's true, though. That is a fact.
So, yeah, that's fair enough. We'll do that. That's a good overtime.
That is a good overtime.
Yeah, because then you have your side
that's right.
to tell.
That's right. excuse me. Oh, my God.
Anyway.
that was an insane. I'm so sorry. I should have brought it. Yeah, no, I mean, that's completely up to you. If you want to tell that full story, I'm happy to talk about it, but that's up to you. It was insane. It just shows you the time. It was a rough time. It was just all this shit at one time. And
exactly.
It was really, though, if you think of it like you just said, it was all caused by the same thing.
It
just
was.
Over, like you said, not just like 2 weeks, but just all this shit at one time, job, family.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I mean, it's not fair to a spouse. What this, what do you want to call it, disease, affliction, whatever you want to call it,
right.
What this issue causes, what it does to other people around you, it's not fair to them.
Right.
And they're trying so hard to support you because they want that person back. They know what's in there.
Right.
And I don't know how many times can you be let down by the same person before you go?
No, that's fair.
You know what?
That's,
you're on your own.
That's totally fair.
And you seem to want to be on your own anyway, so carry on. And now, listen, she and I are as close as we've ever been, friend-wise, you know, friendship-wise. She's remarried. I don't know. It came. Everything worked out the way it was supposed to.
Yeah, but you still have a really good relationship about your kids and
yes.
the importance of all that. That's it's good.
So, because I'll tell you, man, if you remember in the part one, I kept saying, and she would be right there in the doctor's office talking to him and this and that. She had to go through a serious medical procedure, surgery. And I found some reason to not be there. You know, her best friend had to be there to watch her be put, you know, say goodbye to her as she was getting wheeled off to go get put right. under anesthesia, and to be there for her in the recovery room when she woke up. And man, that's heartbreaking if you think about it. Like, hold on, listen, because I, along the way, guys, I had many other surgeries. You know, like, remember in the 80s, the short PE shorts?
Oh, yes, God.
Well, I mean, I couldn't dress out because, you know, my penis hung way down through about almost to my knee. No, seriously, in sixth grade.
Fucking hell.
No. I'm sorry.
He just can't tell sometimes.
In sixth grade, me and this guy had this weird game. Oh, God almighty. Okay.
Excuse me.
We had this weird game where we would sneak up on each other and kick each other in the nuts. Right. And I don't know why we would do this every time we were PE. And just stupid ass kids.
Sorry. Oh, shit. You tickle my face. Oh, fucking hell. It was so serious. Oh, shit,
I'm so sorry.
No, it's good. Oh, but, shit. You know,
I was trying to set up why I've had so many operations on my damn penis. It's not fair.
No, you're right.
I don't know why, but I have I have a penis reduction. Oh, God. No, I wish. We had I had scar tissue built up in my urethra, and it's called a urethral stricture. And they would have to go in there and bore this scar tissue out.
Oh my God.
And then I think I've talked about that on here before. I'd have to wear a catheter for like a week at a time.
Because I remember at a poker game at your old house.
Yes.
You had the first one, I guess.
Yep, that was the first
and
one.
You were in a gown and had your little bag just sitting at a table fucking playing cards. It was the craziest redneck shit.
Yeah. Yeah. You but thought a fanny pack and Crocs were bad.
You're damn right.
Oh, God.
Anyways.
But yeah, so, and now leading up to those surgeries, there were some really traumatic things I went through. Like being held down on this stainless steel table with this syringe like this long. Guy's got it under his arm, and they jammed the tube down your urethra and had to put a rubber band around it because when he would push that plunger, the big syringe plunger with his arm, to shoot this contrast in there so they could view it up on the screen. Dude, I have told you before, it felt like I was abducted by aliens and they were doing these scientific experiments on me.
I can't imagine. Oh, my God.
Almost too traumatic to go through a week. And anyway, I point all this out to say she was there through all of that.
Right.
And then she has to go for this horrible surgery she had to have that really messes with women when they have these surgeries. And I don't remember. I don't even remember what I had going on that I could not put aside to be there for her. So that's what I'm saying. If you knew me back then and you heard me back in my whiny stage about, you know, I was this victim and all this, just know these were kind of some of the things that were happening that maybe you didn't know about and maybe you didn't understand and fairly or unfairly, because I wasn't admitting to much back then, you know, that's what was going on. So I was, you know, I played a big, huge role in the fallout of my marriage. And I was okay with the fallout of my marriage. We were just really good. We were good partners, good roommates, so to speak. Really good parents. And I'll say our DNAs were meant to mix. We made some great kids, beautiful, handsome, intelligent, you know, caring kids. I love them to death. So all that was meant to happen. But, I mean, we, you know, we never set the world on fire, you know. So there's that. But who knows? Who knows what I would, I mean, I probably would have still been there. I'm one of those people, like we just talked about outside. I don't like change a lot, right. You know?
Yeah.
And we had some great times together. A lot of laughs, like we just had. A lot of laughs like that.
Right. Deep belly where you can't breathe.
And so there were some, you know, shitty times, but there were some good times too. So I say all that to say, yes, I lost everything when I got out of treatment, but I had it coming. I should have saw it coming. But Chris took me in. He let me he let me stay there as long as it takes, you said. You know, it's okay.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah, you were like, if she never wants you back, you're welcome to stay here. And so it worked out great.
Yeah, because I'm in that back room. That's where I did all my in a little office room, and that's where I did all my videos that started the channel. That by then, and then for like you're off and on the couch for a couple weeks, and then I don't remember how long became more. Okay, well, you just move in there. I don't. You go ahead. I don't know the timeline.
No. So that was I'll tell you. I was in that treatment facility when Kobe Bryant scored 60 points in his final game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked that date up. That was April 13th of 2016. So that was one of my last days in there.
Right.
So I got out, and then my life fell apart probably 2 weeks after I got out. That's when I came to your house. And then here's where the downturn comes. This is where it gets rough. All right. Chris is a good guy, but at the time, I was still ashamed to tell you anything.
Yeah.
All right. One thing that I have found through being in meetings with other addicts and things is any traumatic event, like a death of somebody or maybe the death of a relationship, causes relapse. And there was a time when I was going from like between your couch, and then I would go because I wanted to be close to my kids, and I would sleep on the couch in the basement over there.
Right.
And, I mean, it was pitiful because I could see it in my kids' eyes. They didn't understand. Even though they were, you know, Landon was right at a teenager, and Brooklyn was, you know, maybe a senior, junior, senior in high school. They didn't know how to act. They didn't know if they were supposed to agree with their mom and
right.
And act like they were okay with what was going on, or if they were supposed to act sympathetic to me. They didn't know. So it was really awkward. And then, and plus, you know, she was ready to move on. So she was up there, you know, talking to dudes or whatever, I guess. I guess it was just too uncomfortable. And so a friend of mine reached out to me, another friend, a female friend. And she was a girl I went to the senior prom with, senior prom with. I actually, I'll show y'all, I have her lips tattooed on my chest right there. That was my first, like, professional tattoo by a tattoo artist when I turned 18. And we were always really good friends, but when you have somebody's lips tattooed on your chest,
right,
and then you're married to somebody else, they don't like that person, right?
Right.
So we weren't friends for a long time. Weren't able to be friends, I should say.
Right.
And we started communicating, and I started telling her what I was going through. What does she say? That's all you're taking? That's all you were taking?
Right.
You didn't have a problem?
Right.
Oh my gosh, I take so much more than you. I've got plenty of those. Conversation started.
Yes.
So, you know, you think my ears aren't going to perk up?
Right. And I think I remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think I remember saying something when you said you're up at this person's house. I was like, it's probably not a good idea.
Probably.
I think I said that because I knew we, at that point, I knew that she was also, mm-hmm. yeah. Oh, go ahead.
You probably did. Multiple times.
I feel like I did.
And so it was the place, it was a place to go where I could say anything and not feel judged.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a good thing. It felt like a good thing.
Right.
It felt like the first time somebody had said, you don't have a problem. I just listened to you tell me everything that you thought was horrible that you do, and I'm here to tell you that's nothing.
Right.
That's absolutely nothing. You have nothing to worry about. You're going to be fine just the way you are. You're hurting. Oh, look at that scar on your neck. You got a reason to take these. You're going to hurt probably the rest of your life. You know, you should be taking these things. You need, you know, oh my God, it was wild. It was a wild, unhealthy.
Misery loves company.
Place to be. And so what happened there was, she was fun to be around. She's super smart. That's where we always, you know, we had great conversations. And like we would sit over there at her trailer and write screenplays, put our phones up and record skits where we're acting. Talk about like this. Let's come up with a scenario and let's act it out and see what we look like. Well, that's pretty fun. You know, I didn't have a job.
Right.
Didn't have a family to be back at. You know, I just, what am I just playing with somebody who's saying you're fine just the way you are? Well,
it's kind of like going back to being a kid, like you said, playing. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just playing.
Which can be a good thing in a certain, most situations.
And I'll add to the problem. She had an insurance settlement.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Where they paid off this amount. So she had a lot of money in the bank. So it was a lot of just, you know, eating out, whatever, having stuff delivered. It was not a good place to be.
Right.
And she fostered pit bulls. So there was...
That's right. I forgot about that.
Six pit bulls in this house that couldn't be out at the same time or they would fight. And it was just really wild. But she was a good person at heart, but she had a problem as well. I had an idea that she was doing some things that were way beyond anything. And because she would always say she had stomach issues. Oh, my stomach's not doing good. I got to go to the bathroom again.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And I didn't fall off the meat truck yesterday. I do say I'm naive to this game, but still, you kind of get the idea.
Yeah, and at this point, you've been through it for a little while.
For a little while. But it was a new level.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens over there, just like with everybody's, you know, drug problems, you run out. You run out every time. It's all fun and games till the bottom run, the bottle runs dry. And we start getting sick. And again, I told you that's the, you don't want to get sick. You do not want to get sick.
Yeah. That's the real quick. Mm-hmm. What was when you, all right, just for out of curiosity, mm-hmm. you got out of what, I don't know, whatever you call it,
mm-hmm.
got out of the program. All that happens. You're on a prescription for the other stuff mm-hmm. that they wrote you.
Mm-hmm.
At what point did you cross the line and relapse? Was there a specific moment? Do you remember?
No, it was.
I'm just curious, like what the thought process is. You justified, or you know what I'm saying?
The thought process was what am I doing? What am I shaping up for?
Yeah,
I already believe that I don't have that bad of a problem, and this was all, I'm a victim
right.
of these doctors, you know. The problem to me was that they never seemed to get my prescription balanced out right. I kept running out.
Right.
And, you know, it's still that's terrible. It's a terrible way to think. But I went, that's the beauty of having kids and other people to live for, is I feel bad for people who don't have mm-hmm. family.
Mm-hmm.
You only have to worry about numero uno. That's a dangerous thing when you are addicted to something. And I think most people, when they hear addicted, they think of a craving. I'm talking about physically addicted to something. Your body is screaming, you know, you need something in here, or that you're going to internally combust or whatever. I mean, it's terrible. So it's not like a craving like, man, I'd like to have some ice cream.
Right.
It's not like that. This is a chemical dependency, and every cell in your body is saying, you better find this chemical and put it in here now. We need it. So please know, when you hear somebody say that they're addicted, that there's a difference to saying, I'm addicted to Rice Krispie treats.
Right. And right.
I'm chemically dependent upon opiates.
Yes.
Or alcohol or something.
Right.
Or even cigarettes, right?
Right.
So, because there's people like, they say quitting cigarettes is hard as quitting heroin and stuff. I believe that the process is, but when you quit cigarettes, you don't have to worry about falling down on the floor in a fetal position, shitting all over yourself, and you know,
that's right.
You know, your body is going to just
you'll crave it. You'll nick out or whatever they call it, but it ain't gonna be some
off.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's a difference in your body just saying, "Nuh-uh, not today."
That's why there's success stories about cold turkey and not in opioids,
right? There are nightmare stories of people having to quit cold turkey who get locked up and go to jail. And they don't care. They don't care if you scream to them.
That's right.
That you're addicted. And Chris, you know, I've told you before, like, how lucky I am to not have gotten pulled over at some point and got searched carrying certain things that you're not supposed to be carrying. And if that would have happened to me, oh my God, I don't know.
That's anyway. Why they do body cavity searches. I guess.
So, that's what it was, Chris. It was a lot of stupidity. a lot of spite, if that makes sense. It's like, oh, I was trying to clean up my act, and everybody turns their back on me right now at my lowest point. Blah, right. da, 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 right. Fuck y'all. I got somebody here that's got my back. I'm going to hang out with him. And I know on top of that, it pisses you off because you're jealous of her, you know?
Right.
So that's stupid. It's very stupid. Well, that's where I was introduced to a term called bioavailability. And what that is when you, it's the way your body metabolizes a drug. It based on the way you ingest it. And I told y'all in the last one that up to this point, I had always pop pills. Well, the bioavailability is the amount, the percentage of that drug that your body gets a benefit of. So when you ingest it and it goes through your digestive tract, a lot of it's lost.
Right.
So you can say, I'm taking a 10 milligram pill, and you may, I don't know what the numbers are, so don't quote me on this. Right. You may get, 6 milligrams, 60% of it. Bioavailability would be 60%, let's say, just for number's sake. If you took that same 10 milligram pill and you crush it up and you snort it like a line of cocaine, the bioavailability increases. That means it goes from, say, if it was 60, and those numbers could be high.
Yeah.
And then now it's 80% bioavailability, because what's happening is it doesn't have to go through your digestive tract.
Straight to
your lungs. And in your lungs is where those red blood cells are getting filled up with oxygen and transferred out to your body. Well, here we go. They get on there too. And now it happens as faster, and you get more of your money's worth, is what addicts call it.
Right.
More bang for your buck. So if you then take that same drug, same 10 milligrams, so to speak, and you then break it down and inject it straight into your bloodstream, now you're at 100% or whatever. So inhaling drugs ramps up the bioavailability. Injecting drugs takes it to the max. I think people, there's something about, you never hear anybody really talking about this, so don't think that I ever did this, but I think there's a different bioavailability for the rectum, like a suppository as well.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but that was a term I was not familiar with. And then you think, well, hell, I've been wasting all this time. I hadn't even been getting the benefit of blah, da, 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 da. So she introduced me to snorting. And do you know how hard it was to cross that line?
Yeah.
I felt so dirty and trashy. And I was so, because again, I partied a lot. I was, as a young man, I was at parties where there was cocaine, but I never did it. I always thought the idea of inhaling a powder, it goes against everything in my brain.
Same here.
It was like I was the same when I was a young man, and it was talking about cigarettes, though. In my mind, I'm like, you wouldn't stand in a room that was full of smoke and inhale it. Why would you inhale it from a cigarette? I used to say that to my mom. But you cross these, you start crossing these lines that you thought you never would cross in life. And this was one that I did cross there at her house. And I wish I never would have, because there's another layer. Now there's another layer to an addiction that I had no idea existed. And that layer is the ritualistic side of snorting medicine. Do you know how embarrassing this is for me to just, like, I knowing that friends of mine can hear this, and family members, if they ever happen to stumble upon our podcast, even though I've told them a million times.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not talking about this openly because I'm proud of this. I'm talking about this openly because I want to help somebody. I've already dealt with all this stuff internally. I'm trying to throw this out there to let people know, if you ever looked at me and thought, James, that James is a fucking good guy. You know what? You're right. I am a good guy. But this disease, this affliction, this, it doesn't matter if you're good or not. This, it gets back in the deep, dark corners of your mind, of your ego. Everywhere, everything it can do, it does. It is a curse, is what it is.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it.
You feel
like, that's what I was gonna say. We were mentioned last week something about shame. You know, shame needs to come back.
And you said it's a good thing. It is.
It is, and that usually is what prevents those things. But this is so powerful, it even overcomes the shame.
Well,
of like, why would I do this?
You know? You think about society now, about the shame thing. My grandma would never go to the grocery store without her hair fixed.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Me and, you know, used to think, not be ashamed about how, you know, they would have to look a certain way and act a certain way in public because they were raised a certain way. And now, in this day and age, there's no shame in anything.
Mm-mm.
If you want to wear pajamas.
I mean, it's a literal meme. It's a meme everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
Peopleofwalmart.com is literally a website.
Yeah.
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 It's crazy.
It's weird. So, yeah. But me personally, I was super ashamed of this and still am. I hate that I even am admitting all this stuff. And I just said that, you know, Google Fiber saw that one video I made. And so there's ramifications. There could be ramifications down the road. To me, though, I'm at 50 years old. I honestly feel like fuck them. Their loss, honestly.
Yeah.
If I'm ever up for a promotion, I'm happy at my job now with the position I hold and everything. But if this job goes away and I'm ever interviewing and they whip out this video, right. Fuck them. This is me. This is who you're investing in. Either believe in me or don't. And there's a lot of other people that will. Anyway. So what I mean by ritualistic, the act of inhaling a drug. I've mentioned on our podcast before, Chris, or on some videos, how I'm ritualistic anyway. Remember I talked about how I get out of the shower the exact same way.
I am too, in a lot of ways.
Put on my clothes. I have to put the same sock on first, and everything I do is in the exact same order every time. When I had my issue with Rice Krispie treats, I opened them and ate them and then turned them. Pop-Tarts, remember? I used to always have Pop-Tarts.
Right.
I eat Pop-Tarts the exact same way every time.
You do the crust first, outside?
I don't toast them, right?
Yeah,
so
no,
I take them with me as a snack.
Exactly.
I break the short side off, and then I break what's left long way. It's stupid, I know, but I just do it that way. And so when it comes to this, this is no different. There's a way that whole ritual starts becoming addictive. There's a feeling of the way you can taste it in the back of your throat and things like it's stupid. It's a line I wish I would have never crossed. And so what I'm about to tell you is I'm about to hit my first rock bottom for you, and not Dwayne Johnson's finishing move. I'm about to. Yeah.
I'm over here. I've been over here doing it when you wasn't looking.
That's awesome. Shit. Oh, God.
Oh, shit.
But, yeah, so she got me to cross that line and get the courage to inhale something. And then she pretty quickly got me to cross another line. So the first one, how she got me to do it, was to teach me about bioavailability and say, look, there's two of us here now. We need these to stretch as far as they will.
Right.
So you can't be swallowing these and only getting a little bit because you're like the Cookie Monster.
Yeah.
We got to stretch this. So you're going to have to learn how to do this. And here I am going, she's the one with the prescription right. and the money.
Right.
And I better step two. Or I'll be back on Chris's couch and he don't have any of these things, these fancy things.
No, no.
So
I had some Advil.
So
I don't even take Advil. I hate it. I ain't taking anything. Oh,
so
shit.
what caused me to cross that line was the fear of what I experienced in Charleston.
Right.
I did not want to get sick again. And again, I had nowhere to be. I had no job, no family. Nobody was saying, where are you at? You know? So it was so wild. It's kind of like this, like I almost just went to another planet for a little bit. I just totally checked out. And you remember, you would see me briefly,
mm-hmm.
and then I would be gone again, be gone again. Well, I had no money, and my car, it would run out of gas on me because that
gas gauge. I forgot about that damn truck.
Yeah, once it got to a quarter tank, this was the Blue Blazer. That was parked beside your house that ended up selling.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's
this
right,
was that
that's
one.
Right. Yeah.
And so I would run out of gas between your house and her house over and over. Cause I knew once I got to her house, then if she needed me to run to the ATM or to do anything, you know, she would put gas in my car. So, but I remember I had this 1 gallon jug, red gas jug, and I'd pull on the side of the road and be like, oh my God, here we go. And I'd take off walking to a gas station, and multiple times people would stop and help me. And one time this whole family stopped. It was on a Sunday and they'd just left church, and they said that they just had a feeling about me that they felt called to help me. And they turned around and came back. They took my jug, went and got some gas in it, brought it back, let me pour that in the blazer, and then followed me to the gas station and filled that thing up.
Right.
And I felt thankful that they did that and appreciative, but felt that tall.
Yeah.
Seeing the little kids through the back window of their SUV.
Right.
Wondering, you know, mommy, why are we helping this man? You know, but I have been told a lot in my life that, you know, when I smile, my whole face smiles and it's disarming and, you know, I'm glad that is something. You know, I've always had a baby face, and I don't know. I guess I'm approachable. I don't know what it is, but I'm glad. I'm so glad that I've had it because it's opened doors for me and it's helped me out in times like that.
A lot of comments and emails too.
Yeah.
During the YouTube years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, boy, that helped a lot, too. And pretty soon, you know, The story is, and I do know, I say you know a lot when I watch that other one back. I've mentioned that before. That's tough. But when you have a couple addicts, because there was another girl who was staying there some, who had her own issues as well. She moved out and passed away shortly after. She overdosed. So now it's just down to us two. And the money runs out. When you got a couple people there who have an issue, an insurance settlement's not going to last a long time. But we weren't dummies. We were trying to make it last. And I told you about the frequent bathroom visits.
Right.
And she would, like, I would get worried. She would not respond to me when I would knock on the door and say, "Are you okay?" She was falling asleep in there. And I would find paraphernalia hidden in places in the bathrooms and bring it to her attention, and she would blame it on that other girl.
Right.
And so here's when there was another line crossed, and it was "Look, James, we can't find pills. We go through so many of them. The cheapest way around this is to get some heroin. And she had a guy who would bring it over. And this was called China White heroin. You have black tar heroin and China White, and it's a gray looking powder. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? So first off, right, this is the first time I've ever laid eyes on it in my life. Cause I might mention things that I saw at parties and stuff, but that was one I never saw. I might mention my mom doing a lot when I was young. I never saw that at my house. So when I laid my eyes on it, to me, I'm like, this is it. Like, this is the line here. This is the one that you can't cross. And she was like, you can snort this. Because I'm damn sure not going to inject anything. And she's like, but it's dangerous.
Yeah, shit.
Because from batch to batch, you never know if they've put fentanyl in it. And I'm like, holy crap. You only hear about that on TV.
Right.
And so she would say, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to snort some of it. And this is so hard to talk about.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And then I know, I feel like I have a good idea of your tolerance. So I will take the first line, and then I will tell you how much you need to take. And I mean, you know, God bless her. She was looking out for me, but this was bad. And so she would like put these little lines together, and I'm telling you, there would be times when she would say, okay, this is pretty strong. This, there,
That's a spec.
Yeah. And I would, and she'd be right. I would feel fine. Everything would be fine. I wouldn't feel like it was too much or anything. Because she was justifying it by saying, James, all these pills are synthetic heroin. And that's true to a degree. Yes, you know? But this, again, is... it's one of those things. It's a cocktail that somebody's throwing together. It's not like a pharmaceutical grade heroin, where, because they used to use heroin, and I think some still do. Maybe I think I've read that before for certain procedures. But anyway, so I started. Now your self-esteem, it just keeps getting lower and lower, and you start looking at yourself in the mirror differently, and you're like, what is wrong with you? How you just went, you went through this treatment facility, and now here you are in the, caught up in this crap. You're snorting heroin, and it was the election of 2016. When is that? November 2nd?
4th, I believe.
4th? Yep. Okay, so that's
4th or 5th.
That's the date. And it was the first time I didn't vote since I was able to. And I was laying there watching it on happen on TV. Sick as a dog. We were out of everything. And I'm in this place. There's pit bulls barking, and I feel like a loser already. And I got the energy. She was like, the next day, because we suffered all day, and she said, I mean, it was bad. We were both. She's going to one bathroom, I'm going to the other, which is on and off the throne. And she calls a friend of hers that, wow, I wish she would have called way ahead of time. And he comes over there with a pill called Subutex. And it is like Suboxone. It's the same drug. Buprenorphine, but I'd never taken one. And she says, she just takes a little piece of this pill, breaks it up and crushes it, and says, here, snort this. And it wasn't much bigger than that speck I just showed you,
right?
And says, snort that and you won't be sick anymore, we're gonna be fine. And I snorted it and we were fine. I felt like $1 million, way better than heroin. And I'm like, I'm going back to Chris's. And she gave me like one or two of those pills. And I left and I never went back, except to, like, if she was in some jam and needed me to drop something off for her, not a drug, like real life type shit. But so what happened was I was able to take a tiny amount of this thing, this pill, and snort it and be okay. Now, this pill is designed to dissolve under your tongue, just like Suboxone, but right. It's a pill form. But it's made to be taken sublingually. But by this time, she had got me snorting every freaking thing that came in that place. It was so weird. And the one difference was this stuff, like, I didn't realize it. It took a while to realize it. But it was turning to cement in my head. And causing me to be nasally, like, stuffed, congested. and then I would have to use like nasal spray, and that stuff's addictive as well.
Right.
That's a chemically addictive thing too. But again, I was off of that heroin and I was excited about this, and I knew I'd found another connection, because I was like, I found this pill, this like this magic, amazing pill. It's the best thing I've ever taken. And it was Subutex. It really was. It saved my life. It came at the perfect time to save me after my lowest moment of everything. That was the worst, was that election of 2016. For different reasons than it was the worst day of the other people's lives.
That's it, I know. So bad.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus.
But yeah,
it was. You kind of miss those mean tweets sometimes, don't you?
Oh my gosh. But man, I came back to your house, and I don't know if you remember this, but I there was one time where I stayed in the bedroom for about 2 weeks, and that was me coming off of an antidepressant that I had been on, but because I didn't have insurance anymore and everything, I just ran out, and it was, I think it was Celexa was the name of it.
That sounds right.
And I couldn't hardly walk. It was, that's the worst, to come off cold turkey of that, and I did that, and I don't ever want to go back because of that, even though I think I had good results on that medicine. I'm glad I ran out. I'm glad, you know, you allowed me to stay there. This is when you had moved me into that bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to stay in there, lay in that bed, sweat it out, and not have to worry about getting up. But I don't know, but some of you guys will remember my nasal sounding.
Yeah, the live streams.
Yes.
Yeah.
When I would be on there and sound like this, like it was so stuffed up, I could not. All that was preventable. It was because I was going through that phase where I thought that was the way. Like I had learned the secret about bioavailability, and it was a way to stretch medicine because I didn't have a prescription. And oh, it's crazy.
Yeah, because at this time we had started the YouTube stuff, mm-hmm. and you'd been recording with me on the Q&As. Then we started the live streams.
But I was off pain pills.
Yeah.
I was only on this Subutex, and because I had found a connection, and it was a friend of mine whose wife had a prescription, and they prescribed her way more than she needed, so she always had extra. They were rooting for me. So you could get $20 a pill out of these. They were selling them to me for $5, helping me out tremendously. And I could stretch them so long. I mean, it was crazy how far I could stretch those things. And that was my life for a long time. It was Subutex. And I remember I started dating somebody. They meant, you know, so much to me. They were in the medical field. And I was like, okay, here's my chance. I made it through this low point in my life. I'm being rescued almost by this angel. She's going to have the means to help me get fixed. Because mm-hmm. ultimately, I want to be off of the Subutex.
Right.
I want to be back to normal. I don't ever want to do this again. And I remember when I was telling her basically what I told you guys in part one. Because in the beginning, we were sitting there talking. Now, it's just not just some random girl I started dating and I was like, whoo, I'm going to throw all my life's problems on her.
Right.
This is somebody who'd been in my life for 20 years and who loved me and I loved her. So that's why I felt that way. But I saw it. I saw it. When I told what the things that I said in part one, I saw the oh shit look.
Right.
And I could tell she didn't have as much experience with the things I was talking about. And I bottled it up. I like stopped before I got to the things I just admitted to
right
just now. And I hate that. I do. But I didn't want to lose her. But yeah, so I don't know. I held back and I would go there and I would take my CPAP and spend the weekend and couldn't breathe up my nose. So CPAP was worthless.
Right.
I'd lay there cussing and I'd be like, motherfucker, I don't know why my sinuses are like this. And I mean, she would even say things like, you're allergic to me. And I felt so bad.
Right.
And
yeah, that's what I was going to say. Cause I just from my perspective,
yeah,
during that time, I had questions like that, you know, cause I knew the history and all that stuff. And I had mentioned, I told you it was a horrible idea going up to her, to this person's house before.
Oh yeah.
But you know, I never thought about it at all. I've never, you know, just
it took me a long time to think about it.
Yeah. To kind of back at what you were saying last episode, I've never seen you high, fucked up, any of that stuff. And you would come out and say, damn, my sinuses are all fucked up all the time. You had to use that spray for the, you know, before you go live.
Yeah.
But I never,
I dealt with it for probably 3 years.
Yeah.
Before I was like, look, man, I know I need this medicine. I know it, but damn it, it's designed to be dissolved under your tongue.
Right.
I don't care about the bioavailability anymore. I'm going to do this. I'm going to try this the right way and see if I can get by. And it worked. If only I would have tried it prior.
Right.
Listen, that woman was the one for me. The timing was terrible. I was not ready. She was not ready. To take on somebody with so much baggage, that's a lot. That's a big ask to come and say, look, I have fallen into the darkest hole of my life. I have a piece of shit car, a piece of shit job. I can't breathe out of my nose. I drag this CPAP around with me everywhere. Oh, yeah, by the way, I'm overweight now. I'm bald now. You know what I'm saying? It's like a lot. To say, but boy, we love each other.
Right.
You know,
this is a fairy tale.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot. So I get it.
And some of that, by the way, is just getting to be an older man. That's how you feel. It's not even,
Yeah, that's right.
Everybody can relate to that to some degree.
And so I don't know. I felt like I was going to finally be able to talk to somebody because I've had so much trouble with doctors. I thought I would have somebody there who really genuinely cared, who could listen to me and then write me a prescription or whatever it was going to take. You know, take me. I don't know how, I don't know. We never got to the point where I could open up enough to say, hey, would you take me on as a patient and refer me somewhere? Or, you know, because I still have a problem because I'm trying to portray like, no, I'm good now. Right. But I wasn't good. I still needed help. But I felt like if I would just come out and say it, she would like build a wall and dump me. Well, guess what? That happened anyway.
Yeah, right.
You know, I should have took my chances.
Right.
And I don't know. I just, I thought, because people, I'm going to tell you right now, I made the joke earlier about the urethra thing. I had to have that procedure done again recently, probably in the last 2 years. And when I went back for my follow-up, for my checkup, I got the catheter taken out, and we're seeing how everything does. He lays me on the table, and he starts, you know, feeling around on my stomach, everything, and he says, "So when are we going to talk about this constipation?" And I said, "Can I get your email address?"
Right.
I said, I've got a really long story I want to tell you. And he was the coolest doctor, his urologist. And he said, "Look, I got time right now. Tell me." Well, I confessed to him, "I'm taking a drug called Subutex. It gives me ED. It constipates me. I think it makes it hard for me to pee. You fixed my stricture. We'll see." But he said, "Absolutely, it gives you ED. He said, "I know this drug really well. It affects everything. Everything you're talking about having trouble with, your sexual drive, you know, it will destroy your libido. It'll everything that I've been experiencing, he blamed on this drug."
Right.
This is a drug that I felt like had saved my life. Because I forgot to say that. I asked, it was when I said it was a big ask to say, "I don't have a job, a good job." Yeah. Da, 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 da. Right. Oh, and by the way, my dick's broken. I mean, for what was I thinking?
Right.
What the hell?
Which is obviously important for intimacy.
Yes.
And, you know, that whole thing.
Holy crap. But anyway.
And you're too young for all that stuff.
Yeah.
Still.
So this urologist says, "Okay, this is what I want you to do. I want you to go tell your primary what you just told me." He said, "If you can," because this doctor said he had a family member on this drug. So he's very knowledgeable about it. He said, "Go tell your primary what you told me. Get off of this. When you're off of it for 30 days, come back and see me, and I will fix you right up." So I go to my primary, and I try to confess. He's like this, you know.
Right. Yeah, yeah, you done.
He literally said to me, because I told him, I said, "I have got this down to, I'm taking," oh, and by this time I was not snorting. And this girl I love never had the chance to date me or be around me when I could breathe through my nose. How terrible is that?
Right.
So I had it down to, I'm back to dissolving it under my tongue, down to an eighth of a tablet a day dissolving it. I just needed this help getting off of this drug. He said, when you have that urge to take it, just don't. I said, "You don't say."
Wow.
Yeah. Holy shit. It's the most profound thing I've ever heard.
Wow.
I could have killed the dude.
This is the primary, right?
This is my primary.
Jesus Christ. Just don't.
I was like, "Holy shit. Really?" But he referred me to a place because I said, "I need help. I'm telling you right now, it's not that easy. I need help. I need to go away." He said, "All right." So he referred me to a place in Winston-Salem. Never heard from them. I reached out to them after I waited long enough. They said, "Oh, yeah, yeah, we got his referral, but we're too far away for you." I said, "Hold on a minute. Were y'all not even going to call me and discuss this? Shouldn't that be up to me?"
Right. I mean, you can drive an hour and a half.
What in the hell, man? And anyway, this is the shit that I've been dealing with. trying to get help. And it's not as easy as you would think. You would think you could go on Google and try to find, you know, a recovery for opiate addiction, blah, blah, blah. Mm-mm. There's going to be 1,000 things pop up. Because people realize how many people are affected by this, there are people who are doing like recovery meals where they put these fake storefronts online with amazing pictures. Right. And they put all their money in advertising. They get somebody to be creative to put this fakeness together and type up this beautiful web page to land on to where you get bought, sold on it. And then you go digging through, trying to find reviews. You find out it's a bait and switch. You pay $20,000 to get flown down to Florida to this place. It's not, doesn't look like the pictures. The people aren't friendly. You get more help from the other people there than you do the staff. Like, there's so many nightmares like this. Right. All they're in it for is the money. And they do the minimum to get the licenses to do it. And you know what I'm saying? Just like in the beginning of the opiate crisis, there were pill meals. Now there are recovery meals.
Right.
And we're just like cattle to them. There are good people out there who might get, you might go to a shitty place and find your angel or whatever, you know. But they're few and far between. And they're overpriced. And to live in a country who recognizes it has a problem, has the means to correct that problem and doesn't, who only wants to look down their nose at these people who are left out here going, what do I do now? I've already lost everything. The only thing I've got left to lose is my life. Will right. somebody please help me? It's hard. Yes, you can, if you go wait outside of the Noah's Ark door long enough, you may get a bed in a 7-day detox facility. But you're thrown out with, like I said, these ridiculous follow-up things to do, to check these all these boxes and jump through these hoops and everything. And I know we have to prove ourselves.
Right.
But be willing to work with people who are at this low point in their life and they're really teetering on losing everything. They're at their last step. And anyway, my primary was no help. I have a job. I have a very important job to my company. I'm like, if I raise my hand and I try to say something to my primary and he's not hearing me or not helping me, as long as he's writing me my blood pressure medicine, my type 2 diabetes medicine, you know, things like that, that's going to keep me alive, I'll live to fight another day. But I literally told the man, I'm buying Subutex on the street. I cannot stop taking it. I'm down to a minuscule amount, but I can't stop. I still get sick. He didn't care. I said, would you write it for me? I can't. Would you send me somewhere where they can write me a prescription? Because he said, I may be able to help you, but it's the problem is you're buying it on the street. What we need to do is show these people that you're getting it legally and have a problem with it. Then it's easier to get you help. And I'm like, why? Why can't you get help? Sense. And I said, so you're saying that, but you won't write it. You try to refer me somewhere, they say I'm too far away. I come back and tell you that, and you're just scratching your head. He said, what do you want me to do? I said, I want to watch you at least pretend to be searching for something.
Right.
You got that iPad and you got a computer. At least lie to me.
Right.
And make me think you're looking. step out of the room.
Yeah.
Come back and say,
give me a fuck you or something.
And so he tried to, he honestly, I promise you guys, I'm not exaggerating. He has tried to tell me when you feel like you need to take it, don't. He said that multiple times to me on separate visits. That's his mentality. No compassion whatsoever.
This is somebody who's never struggled with anything in their life.
He's never struggled. And that's fine. It just one day somebody he loves is going to, and it's going to be a wake-up call.
That's right.
But anyway, I had to get on with working. And so I'm fine. I'm going to make it. My nose isn't stopped up anymore. I have this perfect system going. And then guess what? She, the girl I'd been buying these from for all these years, failed a drug test, lost her prescription. And now I'm up shit creek. There was no more of the days of meeting somebody in a parking lot and all that stuff I described last time.
Right.
I had this one perfect connection that worked, and it worked every time. And I knew it was coming straight from a pharmacy. Everything was working out great. They weren't gouging me price-wise. It was enough to sustain me. And good things were happening in my life.
Mm.
I could see that I was progressing and things were happening. And that happened. And that is where I plunge deeper. And I need to take a break right there. I don't know if we're going to call it. My voice, I'm losing my voice.
Yeah, no, it's, we're at 150. So we're close to 2 hours. No,
I'm so sorry.
Don't apologize. It's a long story. This all needs to be said. I don't know what's up to you.
I feel like we might need to do a part three.
Yeah.
I have no problem.
Yeah, that's fine.
Coming back and doing it again. I'm sorry, guys.
No, that's a good spot. We're getting current.
We really are fairly current. We really are.
But no, look, it's really important to hear all these little details, even like the education on, like, you know, the not only the drugs themselves, but how people think. Like, think about how, you know, you got some trailer park trash, and I'm doing air quotes for anybody on audio, that's figured out how to make this thing last. I mean, these are not just stupid people.
No.
So all that stuff, like, what'd you call it, to make it the percentage?
Oh, the bioavailability.
Bioavailability. Yeah. All that stuff. I mean, that's fucking scientific. You know?
It is.
It's not just, like you say, you know, like people imagine these dirty hicks in trailers and, or street corners or whatever. I mean, these are everyday people going through this that are doctors, lawyers, the person you see at the damn gas station, whatever. I'm sure a lot more than we can imagine. And it's good to hear the other side, that perspective and what you're thinking. And like you said, that those moments you're already beating yourself up about, like, I've crossed this line that everybody knows you don't cross, you know, those type of things. So it's extremely important. That's what I was saying in the beginning. Share the last one, share this podcast, and we'll do a part three to wrap it up and get completely current. Cause this whole, you don't want to say system, but to some degree it is. I mean, they got everybody addicted to some degree. I'm not saying on purpose, you know, and maybe they didn't know back in the day for a while, but they know now. And like you said, that's what blew my mind. When you get to the next part about the help and all that stuff, right? It's like, you can't just go get help. Mm-hmm. But we can send $55 billion to other countries.
I know.
But we can't help our own people, including veterans, not to get all political and all that stuff, but it's the same principle.
I agree.
And that's what pisses me off. Because it's easy to go get addicted.
It is.
Easy.
So easy. It's harder now, but...
Yes.
Yeah.
But you... Easy to go get addicted because that's what they, you know, like you said, this fucker.
Yeah.
You know, those were the days where we didn't realize what was happening. We were just pizza guys, but, you know, drug reps selling directly to people, those type of things, the culture, and it made it so easy. But then somebody comes through the other side, you know, from an injury or whatever it is, and all of a sudden, I mean, it takes a big step to say, I have a problem.
Yeah.
I need help. That's huge. And everybody should be proud to get to that point.
Think about
it. To not be able to go sign up in a place, even if you have to wait for a couple months, is ridiculous.
It is. Because it takes so long to get to the point where you're like, okay, I'm willing and able and ready.
That's huge.
You need a door to open right then.
Right. Exactly. It's almost like I've watched a lot of documentaries on other things. It's like, how many battered women's shelters are there in America? There's thousands. How many battered men's shelters are there? There's one.
Wow. Really?
There's one. Maybe there's a couple more now.
Wow.
At the time I read all this and watched this thing. Because, you know, there's these weird things in society where, we won't get into all that. The point being is the help is not there. That it could very well could be if we took care of our own.
It could be. And it should be.
And it should be. And it's fucking ridiculous.
It leads so many newscasts. It's like the opioid crisis.
Yes. Everybody's
aware it's happening. And they're seeing all these people. There's like the uptick in homelessness and stuff. Like, that's, Chris, if it wasn't for you, like, you let me live with you at a time when I didn't have anywhere to go. Right. I have a lot of friends. I probably could have couch surfed for a while.
Right.
But you, like, gave me a home where I could put the address on mail and still exist in society's eyes. And that was a big deal. There are so many people that don't have that option.
That's right. And like you said, I can't imagine somebody that's completely alone. You maybe they've already lost their family or their friends don't talk to them anymore because they, you know, maybe they stole money from
them. That's right.
Or whatever.
And it happens.
And I, you know, just hearing everything in detail, obviously I've known a little bit over the years, but what you told me. But, you know, imagine somebody not having anybody. So the whole point of this is, you know, just a message about that and then just the empathy for somebody going through some shit. It doesn't mean that you went out and sought to be a fucking addict and all that stuff, man.
You may have a desk job, but on your way to work one day get T-boned.
That's right.
And now you're injured. You don't have to have a manual labor job and get hurt.
No.
I'm telling you, you can just fall down a flight of stairs, and next thing you know, you're addicted to freaking heroin.
That's right.
It's just, like I said, that doctor had no idea when he says it's a slippery slope. It is.
It definitely. But I'm, you know, with your story in particular, I'm glad that you had the wherewithal to, you know, take that step back and almost kind of, you know, don't cross that line because that one's you don't come back from that one.
That's right.
You know, and you kind of got back down to at least that manageable.
Because,
you know.
We'll talk about this more next episode.
I don't know if you want to mention here, but.
She passed away.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. That's it. I mean, the girl that, you know, I have her lips on my chest forever. Even if I cover it up, it's still under there. Yeah. Good friend. Really good friend. Most of my life, you know, she's gone. She did overdose after I got away from there. And it's a trip. It's really wild. So, yeah, it lost my brother-in-law recently.
Yeah.
You know.
To the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's bad. And I'm glad that, you know, at least for the few views we got on, I mean, we got a lot. I'm sure we got some audio listens and stuff too. I didn't check, but I'm glad that there's people in the comments that can relate.
Mm-hmm.
That they even told us during that time of, you know, live streams and all that stuff, we helped them in some way get through some tough times.
Yeah.
So look, we're not saving the world here, but you know, if we can help one person, it's important.
Just to let people know it's okay to talk about
it. That's right.
We
got to stop the stigma bullshit. Yes. And, you know, we've all got weird things in our lives. We've all got our own little quirks and whatever. And some things are more serious than others, but it needs to be talked about and not be a shameful topic.
When I said earlier that was my first rock bottom, I'm going to blow your mind. Like, obviously, that wasn't my rock bottom, because next episode, I'm going to tell you, like, the absolute worst. And that's when I thought I was on the good.
On the good.
I was done.
On the mend, at least.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, as a mild comparison, if people still look after hearing some of these stories, and I'm not saying everybody does, but obviously, you know, there's still a stigma. You know, there may be somebody sitting there going, ah, heel, you were just weak or whatever, blah, 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 blah.
I actually thought about that.
Just think about your diet right now in America, the average American diet. We're all addicts of sugar. So don't think that you can't fall down that hole, that rabbit hole, and be addicted to something like a pill or narcotics or whatever. Don't think it can't happen.
That's right.
Because we're all dying right now because of what we eat. You know, and I'm not saying everybody clearly, but in general.
I like to tell people this. If you had a family member, when I try to tell people to maybe ease up on, if you have a loved one who's an addict, if that same loved one wasn't an addict, but they were a diabetic, and they end up losing their legs, you wouldn't say, you piece of shit. You did that to yourself. You made the choice to put that in your mouth. You deserve to lose your fucking legs.
Right.
You would never do that to them.
Mm-mm.
But for some reason, people think it's okay to go, you chose to put that in your mouth, up your nose, in your veins, whatever.
Right.
You deserve to lose your whole family and everything you've ever owned.
Yeah, it's very odd.
It's shitty, man. How do you expect that person to go have any self-reflection and, you know, think about things? They're just going to go cry in a corner and take the hit that puts them out of their misery.
Yeah, I mean, look, if somebody would be listening to this or something like that, I'm not talking about just us, but something like this or a story about this kind of thing, and you're sitting there with your cigarette listening to it going, God, these people are just trash. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the same level, but it's the same thing.
That's right.
I agree. That's the other big thing, too, obviously, the opioid. But the biggest thing, I would say, is diet. We're all killing ourselves. We're all addicted to sugar and sodium, and it's killing us all.
It is.
Slowly. This is just a faster way, what he's describing, that you could go down.
That's so right.
That's all it is. But anyway, sorry. Soapbox.
I love it.
Done. But we'll get out of here so it's not too long. I can't quite see. It looks like we're up 2 hours, but that's fine. We'll wrap it up next time, I think.
Yeah, promise. It'll wrap up next time.
And then we'll do an overtime and tell that story for our one Lord member on YouTube.
That's right.
All right. We good?
Yeah.
All right, let's get out of here. Let it fade to black.